I'm Steven Sloblon, and I'm a postdoc at the Max Planck Institute for Software Systems in Germany. In this talk, we're going to have a look at the targeted reconnaissance phase of targeted attacks carried out for a four-year period against a human rights NGO. So very briefly, I would like to go through a timeline of targeted attacks that we've seen in the wild. Perhaps the first report was the GorseNet report published by our friends from the Citizen Lab in 2009 that documented the monitoring of a handful of compromised hosts targeting the Tibetan NGO, the Tibetan community. Then in 2010 was the Stuxnet attack, which is maybe the most prominent targeted attack. It was a collaboration between the NSA and its Israeli counterpart to sabotage nuclear facilities in Iran, and it used 4 zero-days to replicate over USB the network and also to escalate privileges. The same year was the Aurora operation that compromised Google and that used emails in order to propagate. 2012 was the RSA Wetteringle attack that was a drive-by download with an interesting twist where the website of that is visited by the target is compromised, so it doesn't need to be advertised in a spear phishing email, for example. And then in the last few years, we've seen a number of attacks mainly targeting NGOs and civilians. And I believe that this session is one of the few first batches about targeted attacks that has been peer-reviewed. So in the following, I will qualify targeted attacks as attacks that target specific users, organizations, or small communities of users into installing malware. And the first two talks that we've seen in this section fall into that category as well. So before I dive into the measurement results, I would like to tell you a few words about how we acquired our data set of targeted attacks. In 2013, we contacted over 100 human rights NGO, mainly located in areas where targeted attack had been reported. Then we found one NGO that was willing to collaborate, WUC, that represents the Uyghur. It's an ethnic minority mainly living in China. And that has about 10 million persons worldwide. And interestingly, this NGO is funded through an American NGO by the US Congress. Then we came in touch with two affiliates of the WUC who shared over 1,500 emails that they deemed suspicious with us. And using manual analysis, we found out that 1,100 of those emails contained malware. And furthermore, by looking at the email fields of the recipients, we found out that recipients that were not part of WUC were also targeted by the same attacks. So to link back this observation with our definition, in our case, the data set that we acquired seems to qualify as targeted because it's the same community of user that is being targeted. So what organizations are being targeted? To find out, we coded the email addresses of the recipients in our data set with to find out the NGO or the organization that they belong to. And to do so, we looked at the domain name in the email address, and also we tried to look them up in social media websites. We obtained the following list. So to the left, you have the name of the organization. In the middle, you have the number of recipients. And to the right is the number of emails. This is only the top 10, by the way. But the list is much longer than this. And you see more emails than what I told you before here, because we count each recipient as a new message in those emails. So out of the top 10 organizations, 6 contain the word Uyghur in their name. And in addition, 2 others contain the word Turkestan, which is the area where the Uyghurs are concentrated in China. And as I said, we have over 100 NGOs like this. So our dataset captures mainly attacks against NGOs, but also a few high-profile targets. And I know that you've seen a number of examples, but I would like to walk you a last one. So here, this is an actual announcement about a conference that was organized in Geneva by the WUC, and that contained a malicious document exploiting a vulnerability in MS Office and that executed malware. The email came from a spoofed email address. As you can see, the subject bears the name WUC. And as I said, the body of the email belonged to a previous email that had been sent by people from WUC. The content was edited by the attacker in that particular case to imply that all the costs at the conference would be covered by the WUC, probably to raise the victim's attention. So to recap, we have attackers that seek to compromise specific targets, here the WUC, and they will craft malicious emails that tend to evade defenses deployed in the email channels and at the victims in order to compromise them. This is the outline of our paper. We've covered the data already. Now we're going to look at the social engineering, the attack vectors, the malware, and I will close with some future work. The specific questions that we answer in the paper, and there are more, are the sophistication of the social engineering, what is the most common attack vector? For example, do those attachments generally exploit vulnerabilities in the software? And how specialized is the command and control? In this talk, I will focus on the first and the last question in the interest of time. So next, I will look specifically at the timing of those attacks. And then we will look at whether the content is being tailored to the victims and whether the senders are generally known to the victim. So first graph, on the x-axis here you have the time. It spans the four years of our data set. We have one data point when one of the email addresses in our data set received malware. And then we vary the size of the data points to indicate the number of malware that was received in a particular month. Then on the y-axis, we have the top 60 recipients in number of emails containing malware that they received, grouped per organization. So we have the WUC, ETUE, which is another Uyghur organization, and then all the others at the top. The rows of our volunteers are shaded, so this is an example of one of our two volunteers. And that specific volunteer joined the organization at the time of the red line. So what you see to the right of the red line, where the data points are bigger, is because at that point in time we had two volunteers sharing data with us instead of one. And interestingly, the month following the arrival of that volunteer, he started to receive malware. So we have attackers that are pretty responsive to arrivals of new volunteers. Then, more generally, what we see is that despite the fact that we have partial data for all the other rows but our two volunteers here, they are targeted often. Almost every month they receive malware. Over long periods of time, the attacks span the 4 years of our data set here, and they are spread over several targets that may belong to the same organizations. Next, we look at the tailoring of the topic and the language of those emails. We have two sets of bars, one for all the emails, so where we have the 1,100 malicious emails to the left, and a second set of bars that correspond to the topics that we have coded. So we have topics pertaining to WUC, the Uyghur, human rights, others and unknown, and we also coded those emails to find out what language they were written in. English, Uyghur, Chinese, and others. So again, to the left are all our malicious emails. And if you look at the top three topics, WC, Uyghur, and human rights, you see that over 90% of all the emails were pertaining to at least one of those topics. So the topics are very tailored to the victims. And in addition, there is an interesting trend. As you move to the right here, you see that the emails tend to be written in English. So the less specialized the email, the more likely it will be written in English, which may indicate some underlying structure in the hit lists that are used by the attacker. So in conclusion, the topics and the languages are manually tailored to the targets. Next, we look at whether the emails generally impersonate contacts of the targets. Here we have three sets of bars. The first one corresponds to all the malicious emails again, and then we have one set of bar per volunteer and per year. Here the coding was done by our volunteers because we do not know whether an email address was known to them. So the spoofed category here corresponds to an exact match with an email address that was known to the victim. Typo is almost an exact match, but not quite, with letters being swapped, deleted, or added, for example. The name or the email address was different, but the name corresponded to an existing contact of the volunteer, and suspicious corresponds to random-looking email addresses. So what we see is that overall, there are over 80% of all the emails that were received by our volunteers that used one form of impersonation or another. And over the last 2 to 3 years, this is over 85% of all the emails that they received. So the social engineering is quite prevalent in those emails, and contact impersonation in particular. As I mentioned earlier, I will skip the analysis of the attack vectors. What we found is that predominantly the attack vectors comprise of documents that used recent but well-known vulnerabilities that tend to evade existing defenses. Now we look at the malware analysis, and in particular, how specialized is the command and control that is used by this malware. To do so, we extracted the malware out of all the documents that we had. So we end up with 500 samples for which we generate behavioral logs. And then we cluster those and look for similarities, mainly in terms of C2, command and control, with malware that was used by other entities reported in for example, AV reports. And we find similarities with groups that targeted Tibetan NGOs and also Indian targets. And over 90% of all the malware for which there is an overlap corresponds to that one group, DTL, for which there is a report that was written by FireEye that indicates that it has seen targeting all those industries that you see here to the right, that include the US governments, and a lot of other organizations. And as we have seen, this particular actor also targeted WC, other NGOs, and civilians. So the C2 is used, the same C2 is shared among a number of targets. Before I close, I would like to tell you a little bit about the future work that I see in that field. Here we focused on the attack reconnaissance and the analysis of the social engineering attack vectors and malware. One could try to generalize the observations that we made using different targets and attackers. Then focusing on the malware analysis, it would be interesting to run targeted malware into honeypots so that we can find out what is the intent of the attackers, and then perhaps try to pinpoint the geolocation of the attackers. And finally, I think the big chunk of future work that remains in that area lies in the design of new defenses against this threat. And perhaps, as Bill mentioned, go for trying to secure different communication channels besides emails. And to give you a teaser of what we've started to do, we've tried to detect contact impersonation in malicious emails. That would be, in the general case, pretty straightforward. You could use PGP, for example. The twist here is that you need the impersonation to be prevalent, which we have seen is the case. So it would be possible, for example, to build a webmail plugin that leverages historical interaction between the target and the senders in terms of typo names and also inconsistencies in terms of authentication and writing style. The writing style is particularly interesting because it could apply to a wide range of application beyond emails. For example, social networks could also be a target application. Then, of course, if both users support that plugin, they could revert to a stronger form of authentication, such as cryptographic signatures. And optionally, the users could choose to upload the attachments to a trusted third party that would perform a complementarity analysis besides the one that is done by the webmail. That concludes my talk. So I've presented you an empirical analysis of 4 years of targeted attacks against a human rights NGO. We've looked at the social engineering, and we have seen that the content of the email was very tailored to the victims, that sender impersonation was the norm. And then we've seen that the infrastructure used to perform those attacks was shared among a number of apparently unrelated targets. And finally, to incentivize the community to do research in that field, we release our data set of malware that you can find at this URL. Thanks for your attention.